Hey, welcome to episode 100. That's right, the big century mark of the Hockey Free-for-All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles, and although there's so many things to talk about, as there always is, one just has to lead off with the Arizona Coyotes finally resolving their issues. And not in any way did the state of Arizona or anything turn out to be a help in this, but the eventual answer became moving or relocating the franchise to Salt Lake City, Utah, which is a U.S. market I would have thought would have been in front of a lot of other choices. Not necessarily Vegas. Vegas has been a great choice for a market, but Salt Lake City with Olympics, international competition, the fact that it's a worldwide first choice or among the first choices for winter sports has absolutely rabid fans. Great pick. Great city to relocate them to. They should have nothing but fantastic success. That being said, a lot of people have to be just very disappointed that Quebec was not even considered in the running. I have no doubt that probably a big reason for that is that the NHL, I think, right now is extremely worried about Winnipeg losing its franchise for a second time. Winnipeg management this time around has done their best to keep the team competitive. When they traded away Pierre-Luc Dubois, I'm sure that he not only soured the management, but the fans with his attitude of me, me, me. He's just one of those generations of players, unfortunately, that thinks he's bigger than an organization, and he's realized since he's gone to Los Angeles, he's not. He has been a total dud in Los Angeles, and what a waste of a contract that's going to go on for 8 years at $8 million for $64 million. Winnipeg fans should be dancing in the streets that that contract is not something their management has got to deal with. And the players that they acquired for him, especially Girardi, has gone on to have a fantastic year. So Winnipeg, by getting rid of him, and everybody going, oh my God, it's a huge big center, high draft pick, got to keep him, actually improved their team. So the Winnipeg fans should actually be happy with the management, not only keeping the team competitive, but making them actually better. And in the process, still retaining Connor Hellebuck, still retaining Mark Scheifele, they did a phenomenal job. Kevin Cheveldayoff should be a legit general manager of the year candidate. So I'm not sure why the team's fans aren't real happy, it seems, with the management, because I think the management has done an amazing job. I mean, that has to go down as one of the best jobs by a GM in a major, I'll call it stress situation, for lack of a better, when one of your quote-unquote star players, at least that's what he was being called by everybody else, wants out, and you come out better? Wow, that's impressive. Anyways, the other issue is, for Quebec, like Winnipeg, it's a small market. And there are small markets that have survived, but the problem is, unless it's a buy-in from everybody, and I don't mean like it has to be a sellout every game, or that, you know, everybody has to be guilted in to buying season tickets. However, it has its limitations as far as draw audiences, as far as where it can pull from. It only has such a reach. And I think that was another consideration by the NHL regarding Quebec as a selected franchise for either relocation or expansion. I would love to see more Canadian cities get hockey teams. It's the place the sport began. It's the sport's home. As many fans in the U.S. that are behind and rabid about their teams, there's just something different. It's a totally different concept in Canada. In the U.S., it's a sport. In Canada, it's embedded in the fabric of every house. It really is. It's that deep of a tradition. And unfortunately for Canada, in addition to Salt Lake City being selected as the relocation target or destination for the Arizona Coyotes, I think you would probably see teams in Houston, Texas, Kansas City, Missouri, Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, something in the Wisconsin area, maybe a return to Hartford, Connecticut, before you would see more Canadian cities selected. And that's unfortunate. There's a lot of great cities in Canada that haven't got teams. Saskatoon, Quebec, a second or even third team in Toronto. You have places like Hamilton and Brantford and other areas in that province. Probably the next Canadian city to actually get a legit shot at an expansion team would likely be the Labrador Maritime area. And I say that because you can pull from Fredericton, New Brunswick. You can pull from Nova Scotia. You can pull from Prince Edward Island. You can pull from that whole region. And it's never been tried. And you could probably even pull some U.S. fans from bordering areas. So it's got a larger reach capability than some of the other markets do. It really is unfortunate because there's so many Canadian cities that deserve a team. But unfortunately, with the way marketing, with the way audience reach works, certainly not to be left out as profit and revenue in any way or shape or form. That's just the bottom line gotta have. Unfortunately, it's gonna rule out a lot of other cities. If I was a betting man, and I'm not, whether it be for expansion or relocation, my money is on Houston, Texas as the next city to be awarded an NHL franchise. Now, moving on to the next topic, there's a lot of concern starting to kind of gather around, if you will, as far as the amount of concussions that Caden Gooley has had. And that is certainly a reason for concern, but it also brings up a couple of issues that I've talked about regularly on this podcast of, for all these people that keep wanting, oh, we got too much defensive talent, we got to trade it away, we can turn some of it into offensive talent, Montreal's never going to sign all those prospects. Well, here's a perfect reason why you don't do that. Caden Gooley has suffered several injuries and several concussions. Caden Gooley's future is extremely bright. Caden Gooley is considered a cornerstone of the Montreal Canadiens. Caden Gooley has kind of been the golden boy, if you will, of all the defensive prospects. Considered to be the most rounded, considered to be NHL-ready far beyond his years from his rookie year onward. Unfortunately, if concussions cut his career short, well, you better have somebody else to replace him with. And that is why Montreal, I am so glad, is led by Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon. People with common sense that realize that. People that have been around on both the game side and the player's side for decades. They get it. People get hurt. People suffer injuries they don't come back from. People suffer injuries that end their careers immediately, prematurely, basically shortening them far from what the amount of years that they could have played. And for that reason, you can't just keep unloading your prospects as all like, oh, well, we've got too many right now, so we can always draft more, can you? Some drafts, as these last two drafts, have clearly demonstrated. Last year's draft, much more offensive. This year's draft, much more defensive. Most drafts, there's a highly touted one or two of each, maybe. Definitely one, but sometimes two. Everybody's fighting for them. So you don't always get the luxury of being able to draft talent deep into the first round or in other rounds like Montreal has enjoyed since 2020. So that's a real concern about Caden Gooley's concussions. One player that people have talked about that is up and coming and is getting more and more closer to being NHL ready is Adam Engstrom. I wouldn't just send him away even if you could get a first round pick or quote unquote highly touted offensive talent. You might want to keep him and others around until you know the condition, the track record, or at least you have some type of content to gauge from to make sure everybody you have is healthy and okay for a long, long time. Which brings me to Juraj Slafkovský. Everybody's like, oh my God, did you see he's wearing a knee brace? Could have a problem. The knee could just be sore. Athletes today are doing things differently. This is the part where I agree with this conversation of, oh my God, athletes today are so much better than ever before. Just to throw a random all-inclusive thing out like that makes no sense to me. Never has. But this is an area where players are trying to either be proactive, preventative, or take care of themselves a little bit more than players did in the past, who wasn't even their fault. You didn't have the amount of talent. You didn't have the amount of medical personnel now keeping an eye on players that you do. So Slafkovský was seen with a knee brace the other day. Could just be a sore knee, just wanted some extra support. Could be a legitimate problem. But the immediate darkness of the report of, oh my God, something's wrong with him, his career could be over with. Really? That's a proper way to react? How about investigating and actually finding out? Which, by the way, everybody of course knows will not happen until at least after the season, and probably not until sometime late summer when it's irrelevant news. The NHL clubs do not owe anybody immediate answers or that kind of information that can put them at a disadvantage. if they're still in the playoffs, or can create their players to be a target moving forward. Okay, this is a weak spot. We'll hit them here every time. We'll take them out. Because teams do that. Moving on from injuries to great seasons and next season's expectations, what a year for Nick Suzuki. The captain ended up with 77 points. Fantastic season, setting new goal totals, new total point totals for a single season. Cole Caulfield, for all the people that wanted to keep holding him down and finding something negative, sets a new goal total. And again, point total for his season. Juraj Slafkovský hit 20 goals, which nobody thought he was going to, or very few. I was one of them that thought he was very capable of doing that, as well as a new point total for 50 points, and collected a nice end of the year bonus for that 20th goal and 50 points of $250,000. So great seasons for all those guys. Those accomplishments were followed by Lane Hutson, who was able to make his NHL debut, and defensive prospect Logan Mailou also made his NHL debut and looked fantastic in their debuts. However, before anybody like goes, oh my God, they're NHL ready, 2 games by Lane Hutson, 1 game by Logan Mailou, not even qualifying as a sampling size. Let's wait until training camp. Both of them looked great. Both of them can probably help the club right now. But again, keep in mind, you got a logjam. And next year probably is being looked at as maybe making the playoffs, but probably the last year of the quote-unquote no pressure, got lots of time to continue building and evaluating type concepts. Next year will probably be that final year for all of that. But I also think the Canadiens could and will make the playoffs in the 2024-2025 season. I think they're further ahead than some teams that have already been involved in their own rebuild process longer than Montreal has been, such as Ottawa, such as Buffalo. And I think the Canadiens are a legit 2024-2025 playoff team. Now, it may be in the bottom third of the playoffs. They may not be a division winner, but think about something that they accomplished this year, which is a weird record for a team to hold. Usually you want to hold like most wins, most total points as a team. You want to have like new standards set for the amount of goals, assists, or total points by an offensive player or by a defensive player, all those kind of records. But Montreal had 44 games that they lost by a goal between their losses and their ties. And if you look at how many games they lost, 36, that's more games than they actually lost. So some of those had to come over from the ties that they had 16 of. So literally, Montreal had 44 combination losses or ties this year by one goal, in addition to the 30 games they won. Think about that. If Montreal even won half of those 44 games, they're in the playoffs. They're in the top five of their conference and in the playoffs. So they're very, very close. And one of the keys to pushing that over for next year, provided he stays healthy, hopefully he does, and is all of his injuries, and I mean all of his injuries, will be behind him for his career, and that's Kirby Dach. Because I say if Kirby Dach was in the lineup this year, a lot of those one-goal losses would have been wins. I think the Montreal Canadiens would have made the playoffs this year had they had Kirby Dach. They're that far ahead. He's that good and a difference maker. And they were that or one of those types of pieces away from making the playoffs this year. And I'm a big fan of what Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon are doing, promoting from within and being patient about their talent from within, rather than all these people that it seems like at least every other episode we're going over a new list of, oh, Montreal's gotta sign as a free agent. No, they don't. They have everything internally. And yet another way that they're doing it their own way, outside of the box, from the traditional methods, is they can have a all-young team. You don't have to have all of the veterans if you have the right young players that are gamers, that are all in, that understand what the game requires of them. It's kind of interesting. The Montreal Canadiens and their management team, when the Patriots were really successful in the NFL, they're kind of drafting their players the same way. They're looking for skill set. They're looking for hockey IQ. They're looking for 200-foot players. They're looking for responsible players. You can do so much more when you have that kind of talent. This brings me to a couple of issues that are going to straddle a couple of different topics from this year to next year as far as expectations. First of all, the goaltending this year, Caden Primo and Sam Montembeau, I think, played beyond expectations. I think Samuel Montembeau continued to grow, contrary to a lot of other people. I don't believe he's the undisputed number one. I think he could be, but I don't think he's that guy yet, because Caden Primo has suddenly stepped up beyond even growth, and towards the end of the season, I think gave Samuel Montembeau something to think about going into training camp. I don't think Samuel Montembeau thought Caden Primo had that level of play in him yet. I think maybe he's put a little bit of a challenge in there and said, hey, be aware, I'm coming. I'm gunning for that number one job. And I think Caden Primo is going to get that number one job. I really do. I think he's going to be out of those two the eventual number one goaltender. And as I've talked about on episodes earlier this year, the team just plays in front of him differently, responds to him differently, plays with even a greater confidence that they do when Sam Montembeau's in goal. And Montembeau has proven himself. He's a good goaltender. The competition is fierce in Montreal right now. The players get it. The players realize they got to come with their A game. As much as I appreciate all of the continued effort right to the end of the season, just like Jeff Gordon mentioned in his interview, they also realize they're playing for the jobs. There's very few on that team right now that you could say doesn't have to worry about not playing for their position and spot on the roster. There's a handful, but not many. And Samuel Montembeau by no means is like a lock guaranteed. Quite honestly, with the way Jakub Dabish is finishing in the AHL, you could see Montreal, if they were offered the right package, something that Kent Hughes couldn't refuse, I could see Montembeau getting traded. I don't think it'll happen. He's definitely not being actively shopped. Kent Hughes has no interest in trading him, but if something comes Montreal's way that can better the organization, a draft package or something, that's just, I can't turn this down, there's just no way. Montreal, for a team, once again, this is kind of a repeat of the center position of a couple years ago. A couple years ago, under Mark Bergevin, back in 2018, they drafted Jesperi Kotkaniemi because they had no centers, and they probably drafted him higher than they should have. Jesperi Kotkaniemi should have stayed in Finland until he was 20 years old. I think that would have changed his entire career, and he would have been potentially an all-star center. All that aside, that was then with the center issues. Now they got so many centers, they don't have a spot for them all. And yet people are still sitting there going, oh, well, we need to acquire fill in the blank. Now, fast forward that to 24, and you've got the same issue in goal. You already traded away Jake Allen, great mentor for the goaltending team, but you got Samuel Montembeau and Caden Primo. Jakub Dabish is right there. Jakub Dabish is closing in on those two quickly. You've got Jacob Fowler, who had a fantastic rookie year in Boston, and no, contrary to other people, I do not want to see him come out this year or next year. Keep him there for 3 years minimum. Let him develop under a great program, especially if he's not going to come to the AHL at least and get 40 to 60 games in. He's going to get minimum 40 games in Boston, so leave him there. You've got Yevgeny Velikin in Russia, who's tearing it up. You've got Quentin Miller, who had a very respectable season in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Montreal's starting to get a logjam at goal. And everybody's like, oh, I can't believe they blew or just wasted three picks on last year's 2023 draft on goaltenders. Wow, nobody does that. Oops, joke's on everybody else. Once again, Hughes and Gordon knew what they were doing. And for all the flack Bergevin took, he's a hell of a draft. After to evaluate talent and draft players, Bergevin is with the best. His problem was, how do you develop them afterwards? Either he didn't understand that concept, which I doubt, or just thought because of how he saw them already and where they were drafted, they were already ready. That was the part that wasn't working for him. If he had had a good development staff after bringing in all the talent that he has, and by the way, a lot of that talent in the last 3 years of his existence in Montreal, Gordon and Hughes have developed with a proper developmental staff led by Adam Nichols. So again, he understood, he knew talent. When I say he, Bergevin, when he saw it, he just couldn't get it developed. That was his problem. And speaking of acquiring players, seriously, there are people that still think Pierre-Luc Dubois should be a Montreal Canadian after the just a abysmal season that he had in Los Angeles. I mean, talk about just a waste of acquisition by them. And there's people that's like, oh, but you know, we might be able to get him for a much lower cost. First of all, again, who in their right mind would want to take on a player who had just finished the first year of 8 years at $8 million per season? That means he's got 7 years left, $56 million collectively on that contract. Really? Are there really people that are so hell-bent on heritage and local I'm from issues that you're willing to take on $56 million of a $64 million contract for a tremendously underachieving, self-absorbed player? Because you know, if he did come to Montreal, he would think, well, I'm from the province of Quebec, I'm special, I should be treated, no matter how I play, good or bad, I should be treated like royalty. No, you shouldn't. He has to understand every team that he plays for is more important than he is. All the other players are more important than he is. The organization, by its very existence, is more important than he is. And that, by the way, that's nothing against Pierre-Luc Dubois. Every player in every sport should understand that. These players that come in thinking they're more important than the team or the organization need a reality check. Need a serious reality check, because that just isn't the case. Your ego might say it is, but your ego's lying to you and not doing you any favors. But just to compare that trade, if that trade was to happen, and I don't care if Montreal gave up a seventh round pick for him, that has got to be as bad as the trade that Irvin Grundman, there's a name of the past, Canadiens GM in 1982, when he sent defenseman Rod Langway, defenseman Brian Ingram, center Doug Jarvis, and center Craig Laughlin to the Washington Capitals for Rick Green and Ryan Walters. Green and Walters, I think, safely could be said each had a good season, especially Walters. Rick Green, yes, was a good mentor and a stay-at-home defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. But that has got to be one of the most lopsided trades in the history of all hockey. And a bad one for the Canadiens, because they were horrible for a long time. A long time. And speaking of equally weird wants, desires, or questions, are there really people out there that think, oh, did Montreal insult Lane Hudson by not giving him number 20 that Juraj Slafkovský wears? Or did they insult Philip Massar prospect because they gave away his jersey number? Seriously? Is there anybody that thinks Lane Hudson or Philip Massar, especially right now, that's their biggest concern? Because if it is, their priorities are out of whack. Their biggest concern is meeting their dream, as every kid who loves the sport of hockey does, is making the NHL. I don't think either one of them would care if you gave them jersey number 1, 99, 100, 50, take your random pick. Their biggest issue is they want to make the NHL as a player and play minimal 10 to 15 years and have tremendous success. I don't think jersey number, it might be somewhere beyond the top 10 maybe of their reasons, but I don't think it's in their top 10. Come on. Moving on to the Las Vegas Golden Knights, absolutely the NHL should take a look. And if the NHL does find something, there should be some serious fines leveled. I mean, like in the million plus range for that. That'll take care of the problem from reoccurring. And if Vegas wants to turn around and sue the NHL, the league will make sure that they keep a very clear and continuous eye and attention on that franchise. You abide by the same laws and policies as every other team and franchise does. Moving on to the Buffalo Sabres, this has got to be an organization that's extremely frustrating for ownership. They constantly have good drafts. They constantly pick high in the draft. And when I say high, like a top 10 pick type high. Yet the teams never seem to have any chemistry. They never seem to have lines that come together for any length of time. They have like games here and there, you're like, wow, they're really putting something special together. And then by the end of the year, just like they did this year, they have now fired their seventh head coach in the last 13 years. Think about that for a second. That's not even a 2-year stint. It almost seems like the Buffalo Sabres have taken on kind of an NFL type, well, you got to win immediately or you're out of here. Yeah, that doesn't work in hockey. That does not work. Rarely do you get a team, I'm going to use this particular team as an example, that falls apart or progressively gets worse during the season, and you fire your head coach, as the New Jersey Devils did, with 8 games left in the regular season. You put in Larry Robinson, your team wins the Stanley Cup. It's not that often. As a matter of fact, that's the only time I can think of that that's ever happened in the sport of hockey. That a team has replaced their coach within the last 10 games of the season and gone on to win the championship. Funny thing is, Islanders could do that this year with Patrick Waugh. You never know. Patrick Waugh, again, for all the things that I don't like in how he left Montreal, and again, he's a perfect example of someone who thought that they were bigger than the ultimate organization in pro sports of any sport. He does not even remotely compare to Maurice Richard, Jean Beliveau, Henri Richard. The list is endless. And he got carried away with his ego, and that he can see where that got him. But that aside, he actually could surprise and do that because the Islanders have changed under him late in the season, and Lou Lamoriello brought him in. Ironically, Lou Lamoriello was the general manager of the Devils at the time, who changed and brought in Larry Robinson. So maybe there's some kind of unique skill set there. My hat's off to Lou Lamoriello. Hell of a GM. But the Buffalo Sabres have now fired their 7th head coach in less than 14 years. That is absurd. You got to be able to bring in a coach, and Buffalo really should take a page out of how Montreal's doing it, because certainly how Ottawa's doing it isn't working out. They look just as confused and lack of consistency as they've ever looked this year, and they were expected to be a playoff team and not just make the playoffs, but make some noise in the playoffs. And they haven't. They missed it again, just like Buffalo. Montreal's doing it right, and I think Montreal is going to blow by both those teams next year in the standings and win a cup long before either one of those two teams do. The only thing frustrating to me about the Ottawa Senators is Montreal seems to always have some of their worst games or loses in a high-scoring 5-4, 6-5, 8-7 type fashion with Ottawa. I have no idea why Ottawa plays so well against Montreal. They could be on an 18-game losing streak, just as a random number, and suddenly have the game of the year. Because why? Well, they're playing against Montreal. Let's have our best game and play completely unexpectedly, like we should have been all along. But there is something beyond the coaching staff to deal with. And that does not mean the next person that should be fired is GM Kevin Adams. He is an outstanding GM. Came in and immediately provided a sense of calmness, a sense of direction, drafts players well, brings talent in. There is an issue somewhere within that organization, and they got to stop using the coach as the fall guy, because they got to get a coach in there that has some tenure, and I don't mean before he joins the Buffalo Sabres tenure, I mean with the club, so he can actually evolve with the club. He can actually create those missing elements that the club desperately needs or will never move forward. Now, before I get back to Logan Mailloux, because there's another topic regarding him that I have to talk about, I want to not forget about a player who also had an outstanding season this year and acknowledge him as well, because he's very, very underrated and very unappreciated outside the organization. The organization and its roster players love him and know the value of him, but apparently there's individuals who think he's just, he's a fill-in kind of guy. He's just holding a roster spot. Not really. He's only 25, 26 years old. He's a big 6'5", 223-pound right-handed defenseman who had a plus 11 season, which was by far the best plus-minus rating on the Canadiens this year. And I'm talking about defenseman Jonathan Kovacevic. I want to acknowledge his great season. He very, very quietly put together an outstanding season, brought a calmness to the defense, played a simple, consistent game that blended very, very well with a lot of other players needing to find their game, settle down, establish themselves. So hats off to Jonathan Kovacevic. He had a really, really fantastic season. Back to Logan Mailloux. I saw a report after he played his one and only game, and that was game 82 of the regular season for the Canadiens this year. I actually saw a report that already said, he's going to be a depth defenseman. At best, he's going to be a number 6 defenseman on the team. Are you kidding me? What? How do you even come to that conclusion after one NHL game? What kind of a moron comes out with a statement like that? That is ridiculous. His offensive talent alone will guarantee he's not that. He's got a mean and nasty streak. He's 6'3", 212, probably will be closer to 220 by the time training camp starts. He plays a physical game. He's not afraid to impose himself on others. He's got the size, and he's done nothing to discredit his value to Lavelle or his potential positioning in the defense in Montreal. I don't know how anybody can already say, oh, he's just going to be a bottom six defenseman. You know, he'll be a depth guy. Really? Wow. That is an amazing statement of stupidity. It really is. That is incredible that somebody could come out with that. Well, you know, I don't know if his game's going to translate to the NHL. Why? Because the NHL doesn't need good skating defensemen with a great first step, great passing ability, has a great transition game, can hit, hit hard, can clear the front of the net, can break out from his own end zone and go coast to coast, as they like to say. Seriously? There's not a need for that in the NHL? Wow. Okay, I don't know what game this guy's watching, but he's not watching the NHL of today. He's not even watching the NHL of yesterday. That was just an insane remark. And I don't know if this guy's got it in for Logan Mailou with some of his past history, because, of course, he had the issue when he was in juniors. He was over in Sweden, took a photo he shouldn't have taken. Yes, I do not condone that action at all. There's no excuse for that. However, the kid was 17. I'll bet a lot of people did dumb stuff at 17. I'll bet a lot of people can look at their teenage years today and go, wow, that was really dumb. Wow, I really shouldn't have done that. And I think the kid has really, really made an effort and has proven to everyone by going through a very elaborate, lengthy, and complete counseling program that few people will ever go through in their life. He's realized his mistake. He's worked extraordinarily hard with the people that the Canadians have him working with, along with his career, developing it in Laval, has become, quite honestly, this year, I think was the key core member of that team, had a really good rookie season and posted some outstanding numbers. What else do you want from the kid? The kid didn't pull, and I'm not minimizing what he did, but of course, like several other high-profile stories, does everybody know every side? No, of course they don't. They hear what they consider to be the most important, cast the rest of the side, and cast judgments on people that they have no business casting judgments on, because A, they weren't there, B, they don't have that privilege or power to do so, and C, of course, one of my favorite phrases that I know agitates a lot of people, should know their place, and would be greatly offended if anybody did it to them. That's where all this is going, is I'm amazed at the amount of people that if behavior was put upon them, or responses were placed on them, that they do to other people, they would be offended and upset beyond words, yet they feel they have the right to do it to other people. Talk about a need for a slap in the head with a crowbar and a wake-up call. Logan Mailou has paid a cost that far more violent crimes involving people or not have been committed and have not nearly paid the cost that he has as a 17-year-old kid. And the issue here, it was an inappropriate photo taken. And yes, again, I agree. It was wrong. It shouldn't have been done. It was bad judgment. Don't condone it at all. But he's paid the price for that. He's paid the price in his career. He's paid the price in image. He's paid the price of publicity. He's paid a lot. And again, I've always been the person, whether you're talking about the Ray Rice issue in Baltimore or countless other issues that have happened, I would love to be able to objectively hear all sides. And in another player signing, the Montreal Canadiens have signed forward Luke Tush out of Boston University, as his season, like his teammate Lane Hudson's, has come to an end. And Luke Tush is going to be an interesting prospect for the Canadiens. Could be a fourth liner, could be more, could be the replacement, and certainly can't be any worse than the season that Josh Anderson had, but could be a replacement for him. 6'2", 196, big, seen as a power forward, and had his best year by far of his junior career this year in his senior year. So he's kind of trending up as his years are going along versus Josh Anderson, unfortunately, who just had a hellacious year. Josh Anderson had a good year defensively. Josh Anderson had a good year being involved in the play, just had an abysmal year offensively, and just had zero luck. It's like before the season started, somebody said, nope, he is not going to get hardly any goals this year. He just had a horrendous offensive year, which I hope he's moved in the offseason, both for the benefit of the Canadiens and for him. I just think he really, if he's got anything left in the tank, if he can revive his career, honestly, I think it's just got to come in another city. For some reason, he's just another one of those players that it just hasn't worked out in Montreal. Now, as the playoff season comes underway, and Montreal, of course, isn't a part of it, we're going to talk probably more about the draft in coming episodes, but let me wrap up episode 100 with some draft discussion. I'm not surprised at all that the Canadiens announced they're not going to take another left-handed defenseman right now. There just isn't any room in the organization. I mean, like I said earlier, don't just get rid of them to get rid of them, but right now they literally have nowhere for them to play, and that could be a problem. Not to mention the fact that defensively, their cupboards are very, very well stocked, so Montreal, in my opinion, is looking at offense this year, and I hope the players they're looking at is Russian winger Ivan Demidov, center Caden Lindstrom, center Caden Berkeley, or winger Cole Iserman. And hopefully the Montreal Canadiens will have a very, very good chance of getting one of those four players that I mentioned, because the Arizona Coyotes, in wrapping up their season in their own game 82, beat the Edmonton Oilers 5-2, which was a nice way for them to salute the fans that they won't be around anymore, but also locked Montreal into a top five draft position, most likely. That being said, though, of course, the lottery, depending on what happens, Montreal could be out of the top five. I think Montreal will probably be picking at number five, just like they did in the 2023 NHL entry draft. I can't wait already for the 2024-2025 season to begin for one reason. I can't wait to see what other prospects that Montreal already has makes that roster next year. And I'm really excited to see the next draft by Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes. On that note, thanks for tuning into episode 100 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have a fantastic upcoming week.